Once upon a time, I was invited to a costume party hosted by Scott Coyer, the coolest kid in my fifth grade class. Now, I don't know about you, but I remember fifth grade as the year that I first began to take notice of the social hierarchy of things. I began to notice that a few more popular, cool kids were at the top of this pyramid, and more of us were closer to the bottom. And I wanted to figure out how the rules of this game worked. Was I at the bottom because I still wore sweatpants to school every day when other kids moved on to jeans? Or was it because word had gotten out that I wanted to be a singer like Mariah Carey when I grew up? It's a dream I'm still clinging to. As far as I could tell at the time, the most revered kids were the ones who were the best, the most skillful at making fun of other people, which made the whole system, theologically speaking, a certain kind of hell. Looking back, the rules seem to have been mostly correlated with gender roles and who was the best at performing their part, male or female, boy or girl. Girls with fashionable outfits were higher up on the pyramid, as were boys who were good at boy things like playing sports or hiding your feelings. It's true. So back to the high-stakes costume party. I had spent weeks deciding whether to go as a clown or an army guy. I'd gone back and forth, unable to decide. So at the very last second, we were headed out the door, and I changed my mind for the last time. I threw off the clown costume I'd had on. I put on the army guy outfit, and off we went. So you can only imagine my surprise when we arrived and learned that this was not, in fact, a costume party at all. Yeah. It was an army-themed party. And at the end of the night, I won the award for best dressed. It is, to this day, the only time anyone has even considered giving me that kind of an award. Now, you would think that this miracle of good fortune would have left me feeling on top of the world, right? But I was actually just as freaked out as ever. I knew that I had escaped such massive embarrassment by the skin of my teeth. And I knew that even if I'd been momentarily dealt a good hand, the long-term rules of this game were not in my favor. Just the thought of showing up to this party in a clown outfit is an image that, even though it never happened, is so burned in my brain that it haunts me to this day, so much so that I'm preaching to you about it this morning, if that says anything. Now, fast forward a couple of years, and I attended a Unitarian Universalist summer camp. And in this place, the rules of the game seemed to be turned upside down. There were certainly some people that were more popular than others, but they seemed to be the ones who were the warmest and the most welcoming. Respect seemed to go to the people that invited newcomers into the circle, invited them into the conversation, the ones that fostered connection instead of competition. This was genuine love. If you've ever found a place like that in your life, would you say out loud right now, genuine love?
Genuine love.
One conversation in particular that explains the upturning of these rules has stuck with me. I was on a long walk with a new friend of mine, someone I was becoming real close with, and I don't remember exactly what I said to him, but I basically bragged to him that someone who we were both close with had given me a friendship bracelet instead of him. We all know that in the social currency of hippie love camp, friendship bracelets are like the gold standard. So here I was, enjoying this person's company, really enjoying my time with him, and then saying this awful thing to him about who was closer friends with who. What I thought I knew about community was some kind of boxing ring mentality, thinking that whoever throws the best punch wins. But my new friend responded to my unkindness with love, and he did it in a way that I literally did not know was possible. He made eye contact with me, and he smiled at me, and he said how glad he was that I was finding a home here. this was creative love. If you've had a person like that in your own life, would you say out loud right now, creative love? Whatever nonsense I'd learned about social hierarchy, whatever awful lessons I had internalized about how men are supposed to speak to each other, I saw for that moment at least for the ridiculousness that they were. When I showed up believing that competitions and put down would get me somewhere, he showed up with a love that dismantles that status quo. He had literally loved the hell out of me. If we have any hope of building the kind of world that we want to live in together, we need to seek out those mentors who love us enough to meet us where we're at and love us enough not to let us stay there. And then we need to go out and be that person for others, because nobody can make it out here alone. I always remember the first time I was in a conference setting, and as part of our introductions, we're asked to share not only our name and affiliation and where we're from, but we were asked to share our pronouns, whether we wanted to be called by he, she, they, or something else. All of my life, people had read my gender in complicated ways, but this was the first time I'd ever been explicitly offered the option of identifying as I wanted, as felt right to me. No one had ever asked before. Going on to learn the stories of transgender folks in my life and in my reading, my heart opened, and even though I continued to identify as male, I began to recognize how the multitude of behaviors and feelings and thoughts and preferences that make me who I was have been carved up and divided up and placed in these narrow boxes of gender. This invitation to share my pronoun was an offering. You don't have to call yourself by what the rest of the world has always called you. You can show up as yourself, no costume required. There are a few among us for whom the made-up story of our gender has not limited our understanding of who we are or who we might be. These rules tend to dictate who takes up space in the living room or the boardroom, how much we get paid and for what kind of work, and of course, who gets to be president. I remember one story in particular about a basketball star, Wilt Chamberlain, who was the highest scoring player of all time, one of the greatest basketball players in history, perhaps that there ever will be, except that Chamberlain was terrible at free throws. Now, free throws are the only time in a basketball game where you get to just stand right in front of the basket and shoot without anyone in your way. But he only made an atrocious 40% of these shots. It was an incredible weakness in his game and for his team. There was one game, though, where he made 90% of his shots. The difference in this one game, March 2nd, 1962, was that for almost the whole game, he threw all of his free throws from between his legs like this. I learned that was called granny style. It turns out, though, that this is a much better way to shoot free throws. So he was making 90% of his shots, but at the very end of the game, he switched and went back to throwing overhand and missing. The only explanation he ever gave for the switch was that throwing underhand made him feel like a sissy. To the greatest basketball player of all time, the only thing more important than basketball was not looking like a sissy. He was clear that his understanding of his masculinity was more important than the game he dedicated his life to, more important to him than his career. I wish that Chamberlain had had a summer camp friend or a loving community like this, a progressive faith community who have, if we couldn't have loved the hell out of him, at least loved the bad free-throwing out of him. Religion ought to be the place where we dismantle these boxes that have been placed over us and locked down around us. If you agree, would you say out loud right now, dismantle the boxes? Religious community should be a place of love that comes in rainbow colors. Dear ones, there are those of us here who were raised as boys and educated into this masculinity. We who call ourselves men have been taught to sometimes choose misguided understandings of status or power over our relationships. We've been taught to choose image over authenticity, speaking more than listening, or objectification instead of connection. Fellow men, if this describes some piece of your own story, as it does mine, certainly, will you commit with me to rebuilding the skills for beloved community that sets our relationships ahead of the false idols of status and power? If so, fellow men, would you say, I do? Similarly, for those of us educated into the myth of whiteness, we have similarly too often been taught to value our comfort over justice. We've been taught to value individualism over community and intellectualized empathy instead of gut-level transformation. In this country so deeply founded on a history of racism, fellow white people, will you join me in recommitting to moving through the discomfort of deep re-education and commit to loving justice not just as an idea but as a way of life? If so, fellow white folks, would you say I do? Thank you. Those of us of all different kinds of identities that we bring to communities like this have different commitments to be making, but we know that nobody out here can make it alone. In Canada earlier last year, a particularly concerning video went viral online. This video was a middle-aged, white, religious, conservative woman rapping about how confused transgender people must be and why they shouldn't be allowed to use the bathrooms for which they identify. An 11-year-old Unitarian Universalist friend of mine, Anthony James, wanted to respond to this video, making all the headlines, because having grown up in Unitarian Universalist community, he was confused that anyone would think religion could be used for discrimination. How quaint. As someone who himself identifies as gender creative, For him, religious community was the first place where he was ever fully accepted without reservation. And so he got to work. He organized his mom and then dozens of other UU congregations from across Canada to work together to make a new video responding to this old one. A new video proclaiming messages of love and support for the trans community of Canada and celebrating the role of religion in honoring our full humanity, regardless of gender expression. When Anthony's mother expressed concern about him as an 11-year-old, a gender-creative, vulnerable person, speaking out on this incredibly controversial issue, she said, "Some people might hold this against you." But 11-year-old Anthony said, "Right, Mom, that's not a reason to be quiet. That is a reason to speak up. When the world is sick, can't no one be well, but we are beautiful and we are strong." As a white guy with a middle-class background, I sometimes feel like I showed up to this party wearing just the right costume, so that by some accident of fate, things around me can look more equitable than they really are, and my community can appear safer than it really is. I need people like Anthony, people like my summer camp friend, to mentor me, to teach me the way of beloved community. Would you say beloved community?
Beloved.
I invite you to join me in seeking out those mentors that can show us the better way that we didn't know was possible. And so together we'll find those moments where we can change the rules of this game. Would you say change the rules? Where we have been limited by made-up stories of race and gender, where we recognize those systems of oppression around us and within us, let's dismantle the false binaries wherever we find them. Would you say dismantle the binaries? And in our prayer and in our words and in our faithful daily action, let us go forth in love to build the world that we know is possible. Would you say love?
Love.
You are beautiful and you are strong. Amen. I invite you to take another deep breath together. And let's join together in a shared silence.